Communication Mixed Down.
The show that takes a critical look at contemporary media.
And explores the way we use communication to make sense of the world around us.
From social media to citizen journalism.
To the logo on the front of your favorite t-shirt.
It's all part of the Communication Mixdown.
Each week, Thursday, 6 to 6.30, Communication Mixdown. Cranking up.
Right here on 3CR.
I think we live in a kind of paradoxical time. The world is more and more and more and more complex. On the other hand, we're only going to ask you a question that you can answer in 2 seconds. So we leave ourselves less and less time for reflection because our communications media push us to quick responses. And quite frankly, the questions before our planet right now are not questions that should be answered or thought about in the time space of texting.
Hello. That was a small segment taken from a recently released feature documentary film called Stare Into the Lights, My Pretties. The unusual title comes from a reference to the all-time classic film, The Wizard of Oz. My name's Zach Shapiro. Welcome to Communication Mixdown. Stare Into the Lights, My Pretties is also a film about wizardry, the wizardry and power of new media and digital technology. Since its release last year, the film's been screening at some prominent film festivals in Europe and around the world, as well as online, and it's been getting some pretty positive reception from both critics and viewers. The Stare Into the Lights, My Pretties hones in on our growing obsession with technology, screens and devices, and the effects these appear to be having on our lives and on our brains. I was able to speak with the writer and director of the film, Melbourne resident Jordan Brown, a couple of weeks ago. And we began our conversation by me asking him what motivated him to make the film.
So the idea of the film started back in 2009, where I didn't have the original goal to make a feature-length documentary. The impetus for the film was wanting to do a short film about Google and the impact that one company was coming to have over the way many of us access information online. I wanted to look at issues like privacy, and in 2009 Google was doing a book digitization project where they were scanning a bunch of
Google books,
and yeah. they were out there scanning a bunch of books and keeping those digital copies for themselves. So there was this sort of, I guess, critique going around at the time that, you know, what does it mean when one company like Google comes along and vacuums up, I guess, literature and culture and knowledge and things like this. But, and then because it has this sort of monopolistic control over the way we access information online, there was a question there, you know, what does it mean when one company does this? So I wanted to use Google as a case study, really, just to talk about those issues. And so I went off to interview for that sort of short project, and I met Katina Michael, who's one of the great central voices in the film, who we had a great interview. And very quickly, it dawned on me that we had this conversation about Google, but it quickly expanded into other topics and areas. You know, we quickly got into things like artificial intelligence and this culture's complete fascination with, you know, say, so-called machine learning and robotics. And, you know, people like Ray Kurzweil, who is now one of the senior technologists at Google, pushing for this sort of transhumanist.
He's making some sort of synthetic neocortex or something, apparently.
Right. Well, yeah, he has many sort of crazy ideas, I think. So, yeah, coming across people like this who had these really sort of radical ideas about, you know, doing away with biology completely and turning not just society into technology, but the notion of body and life itself into you know, giving your life up at the source to the machine kind of thing, I guess, is a way to sum it up. So, I mean, there's some statistics to go through that are explored in the film. Yeah, you know, we have 3.8 billion people online, which I think is a little bit over half the human population at the moment. And, you know, you have 2.2 billion of those people on Facebook. So that's a tremendous power that's given to one corporation. And, I mean, that's a whole conversation in and of itself. I mean, a year has passed since I finished the film, and just what we see sort of... I think these issues have always languished with a company like Facebook, but now it's all sort of exploding just because there have been so many controversies and just, I guess, the manipulation is so... I guess has reached this point where it's just so obvious for anybody that's really paying attention.
What are some specific examples of the ways of the, you know, the darker side of using social media like Facebook?
Well, one that many of us would probably know fairly intimately, that you'll be going about your day and then you'll be bombarded with certain types of advertising that you might find fairly creepy. You know, there's a lot of anecdotes that I've come across in working on the film where people talk about, you know, they're having a conversation with someone and then a couple of hours later or the next day they're getting ads about the theme of the conversation they were having with someone, something that they've never talked about before in their life. I mean, one example I've seen also online was someone who didn't have a cat and wanted to test this idea out by having getting their friend together and talking about, oh, I've got to buy some cat food, even though they didn't have a cat and they'd never talked about cats with a specific person.
Oh, just as an experiment.
And then now you get creepy ads for cat food or cat products or something like this.
Facebook is listening to the conversation.
I don't know if it's listening. It's maybe not necessarily the conversations, but it's all the other data points that sort of surround your digital shadow, if you know what I mean. You know, we walk around, many of us walk around with mobile phones in our pockets.
Yeah,
that are
location is
totally the location data. It's constantly pinging the network. Mm. All of that sort of, all those, even just the location pings are something that can be used and are often used, say, for example, in shopping centres to work out the path that people walk through a specific physical space in order to put products in a certain spot to encourage, you know, impulse buying.
And are we all sort of naive to that in that we should be changing our privacy settings?
Well, this is an interesting point because I think, as I tried to argue in the film, this is not really something that we can completely opt out of. We can have a personal choice as much as it is still even a choice these days in modern society to not have a mobile phone.
Mm.
But what do we do about the prolific CCTV everywhere that's doing facial recognition and also doing similar profiling for behavior and where people are at a certain time? And I think the point to be made is all of this cross-domain data analytics. This is where these companies and where the techno society gets a lot of its power. It's this consolidation of all of these fairly innocuous data points by themselves, you know. Mm. The fact that you were on the edge of a street corner at a certain time of the day in and of itself doesn't really mean much.
Mm.
But when you couple it with all of those other data sets, which is what we see increasingly these days, there's a real power that comes from putting that all together and really being able to see the ins and outs and particulars of someone's life in a really granular and intrusive detail. Say the example with CCTV, there's a scene in the middle of the film that kind of makes light of this, that CCTV has become so normalized now, for example, that many of us don't even notice it anymore.
Yeah.
So there's this guy called Surveillance Cameraman who makes a point, his method of protest is making the point of walking up to people and getting into their physical space and recording them in the same way that a CCTV camera would.
Mm.
And many people object to that when it's part of their awareness. Hey, man, why are you taking my video? What are you doing?
Yep.
This is really intrusive and invasive. Go away.
But we don't mind if we don't.
But we don't mind if it's out of sight. Out of mind. And I think also this sort of normalization is the other thing that's... or the effect of creeping normalcy, which is this notion of slow incremental changes which happen over time.
Mm.
I mean, you can't just do this big objectionable thing, but if it comes along in slow incremental stages. I mean, I'm not necessarily talking about there's this grand conspiracy on the part of technologists or corporations to do this. I think, as I also try to argue in the film, I think this is inherent to the sort of society that gives rise to these kinds of technologies, is that it's one inch at a time. The analogy of the panopticon is a really effective way of sort of describing the power dynamics of the techno society. So what a panopticon is it's a prison design. And you have, it's radial, it's in a circle. You have the guard tower in the center, which is really brightly lit, and then you have all of the prison cells around the outside of the circle. So there's no interstices of the prison. There's no place to hide, literally. And one of the central functions of the guard tower being in the middle and being brightly lit is that from the perspective of the prisoners, you can't see the guard tower. You can't see into the guard tower.
Right.
You may not even know that there is a guard tower. All you can see is bright lights.
Mm.
So what happens in this sort of situation is there is a chilling effect on behavior. It's that notion that if you can be watched at any given point in time, then you're going to behave in a way as if, you know, assuming that you would be watched at any given point, even if you're not being watched. Yeah.
And they're everywhere, aren't they? Like, you know, in your workspace, in shops and pretty much everywhere.
Yeah, bathrooms even, you know.
It's really?
Just, yeah, in the States particularly, there's schools, I mean, Britain, that's a good example. In England, you know, I think, what are the numbers off the top of my head? I think there's one CCTV camera for every 14 people in England.
Who's watching them? Like, that means you need, like, millions of people sitting in front of screens watching them.
Well, not necessarily, because a lot of it these days is automated, and this is the point. I mean, there are people sitting in a, you know, creepy dark room watching people, but a lot of this can be retrospective, and I think as these sorts of technologies become really pervasive, stuff like facial recognition software and gait recognition and profiling certain behaviors to trip off an automatic ping, you have someone doing behavior that's ascribed by the people that are controlled in these systems as suspicious, and then that gets flagged for analysis later. So this is this whole thing. It's like the panopticon thing where you have... It's a chilling effect on behavior. You could be watched at any given point in time, even retrospectively.
Yeah. This is Communication Mixdown. You're listening to a pre-recorded interview with Jordan Brown talking about his recently released feature documentary, Stare Into the Lights, My Pretties, a film all about the power and impact of new media and digital technology. So in the film, you interview Susan Greenfield, and who's a neuroscientist, and she talks about sort of neuroplasticity, or the effects of this kind of screen culture on the brain, and how it's sort of changing the way we engage with information, and how it's changing our attention. Click on something and then easily become distracted by something else, and then kind of often end up looking at something not what we originally planned.
How many of us have done that, right?
It's yeah.
And I did this myself, even in the production of the film. You jump on Wikipedia, for example, to look up something.
And it's kind of good and bad, isn't it? Like, because there's just this plethora of ideas, and you're going, that seems interesting. I'm going to go there.
And then you end up on you sort of go down this rabbit hole where... Yeah, well, I mean, what I was going to say is that, I jump on Wikipedia to look up something, and you end up clicking, and you go on this sort of strange click trail.
Yeah.
And then, you know, before you know it, 2 hours have passed, and you're like, how did I go from, I don't know, looking up the origins of television to, I don't know, I want to say something totally ridiculous, like how sausages would get made or something. You know what I mean? It's just like, I think this in one way sort of sums up one of the really powerful elements of the screen culture. There is this... By the way, the technology is designed and flows on from that sort of hyperlinks. Everything is a link. It's not the same as reading a book. You have this constant. Yeah. You have this sort of stimulation that you don't get from other forms of media.
And you're sort of driving it, aren't you? Like
you're driving it, but also the algorithms on the other side of the screen are driving it. I mean, maybe not on Wikipedia, because that's more sort of you clicking, but say in a in a corporatized space like Facebook, there are very powerful algorithms behind your click trails. Tapping into a lot of psychological drivers to get you to click on something. I mean, people talk about clickbait, for example, in news media, which is annoying. But, I mean, one of the ways that is annoying is because it's playing to certain psychological characteristics to get you to click on it. So I think that's one of the concerns with such a pervasive screen culture. It's like, who's in charge of our online screen time? If we're spending up to 11 hours a day in front of a screen and we have all of these algorithms behind the scenes to varying degrees influencing our behavior and our experiences, our information experiences, what does that mean for, I mean, on a personal level, for how it changes our brain? I mean, the concept of neuroplasticity is that if you're doing something, the brain adapts.
Yeah.
And it's like a muscle. It's analogous to a muscle. Yeah. If you're doing physical exercise, if you're doing weights or something, your muscles in your arms get really strong. So if we're practicing using a computer, we get really good at using a computer, but it also changes the physical makeup of how our minds work to be more like a computer than it would otherwise be without that exposure. So if you're not practicing something like deep thinking or having a long attention span or thinking about abstract concepts or logical narrative, all of those things that Susan Greenfield talks about, then you lose those abilities, just in the same as if you don't exercise, then you lose those abilities. So it's a concern. I think it's a concern. What sort of, I mean, on the personal level, how does it change us as people? But then, again, going back to the interplay between technology and society, if we're spending the majority of our waking hours on these screens, what sort of society and culture does that imbue and perpetuate, I think is a really important question.
Are we just, I don't know, are we getting old? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I think I read something about when the printing press was invented and people started reading books, they were saying exactly the same thing. People were spending all this time reading books and not getting out and, I don't know, going to the places where people went to meet other people and to interact. And, I mean, clearly this is, you know, this is kind of exponential, isn't it, by comparison, like when you know, compared to your humble book. Now, you know, we've got screens all around us. Is it not just, what am I trying to say? Like, just a matter of degree. It's not that something's really changed.
Because I've had that critique before, and Susan Greenfield again addresses this in the film to a sort of probably a more articulated extent, is that she sort of says that, one of the critiques she gets of her work is that people say, oh, you know, you're a Luddite, you're just backwards, you're getting old or whatever, you know, and you're not embracing this change, and change is inevitable. And, the printing press came along and it changed people, it changed how they thought. And, you know, you hear people arguing that had a reduction on memory. Say, for example, people that were doing plays would be able to remember huge swathes of dialogue, but then when the printed word comes along, you're sort of outsourcing your memory to the book. And, I mean, there is an impact, and we can sort of argue if that's a good or a bad thing, whether, you know, the impact of the written word. I think there's a balance to be made there. But I think the point with looking at how technology influences society is that there is an impact. So say for that externalization of memory, you know, if we bring that up to the current day, we do that with Google, you know. There's so many things we don't even remember anymore because we can just look it up on Google. There's a psychologist in the film, Betsy Sparrow, that did an experiment on this. It's what happens to people's memories when they're not internalizing information, when they're not internalizing knowledge or linking information together to form knowledge, that internalized knowledge. We're externalizing that to a machine. We're outsourcing that to a machine.
It's almost like a kind of cyborg thing, isn't it? Like augmenting our nervous system.
I think it's very much this notion of what are the impacts? So to bring it back to things like the book, like, and maybe television and telephones, where all of these similar arguments were made in the past of, like, people freaking out about the impact of technology, I think some of them are still carry on. I mean, people's concern about what social influences television had, or how the telephone closed distance back in the day, are still really valid issues in the pervasive screen culture of today. I mean, one of the differences between television back in the era is that you only had one television set in your house. We're not sitting alone in our bedrooms in front of a screen alone together, in the words of Sherry Turkle, you know?
Yep.
Back in the day, we sort of had this family moment, which we can talk about the ways that television, even at that time, would pull away from family moments. And, we all sit around and have dinner and don't talk to each other and watch the TV, but at least we were doing it as a group.
Today, we're not even doing that.
We're just sitting in our rooms, further atomized and alone together. So
we're all watching different Netflix, aren't we? We can't even have conversations about it.
Yeah, exactly, because your Netflix is totally different to my Netflix.
If you had to maybe sum up, you know, where do you think things are going? Are you optimistic, or are you a bit pessimistic about it all?
I guess in a short way, I think things definitely can improve. But, I mean, the choice is up to us, right? I mean, it starts with this desire to want things to change. And I think that's one of the questions in the film. It's like, okay, if we see this sort of emergent techno-dystopia happening right in front of our eyes, and if we don't see that as desirable and we don't want to have that kind of future or even present... what are we going to do about that? What do we do with this information, you know, and how do we act on this? And so I think, there's one of the ways that I am hopeful is that once people have this awareness or even just begin the questioning, then it can really be a journey to open up some of the really, you know, important life questions for people. You know, what sort of life do we want to have, and what sort of world do we want to leave behind for those that come after?
Are machines more important than the real world?
Well, yeah, totally. That's the whole sums up the whole film right there. You know, I mean, what are we giving our life to? Again, if the majority of our time is spent in front of these screens, a huge amount of our life force is surrendered to this machine, this mega machine. So, do we want to do that? And is that a good thing? And I think if we really are serious about looking at the impacts, not just on a personal level, on a societal level, but the physical world, the environmental impacts, we can see that this social arrangement, this techno society, is not sustainable. It's inherently unsustainable, and it has an end. It has a finite point. And so I think, as we sort of, you know, if we can talk about things like climate change and ecological collapse, and you know, if we're going to just sit in front of our screens and be distracted by watching Netflix, what's going to happen when, you know, the power goes out and, you know, we need to eat? So I think people are really going to... There'll be a point, even if we stay in denial, you know, there'll be a point where these questions will be asked and answered for us, if we don't do it.
We live in a techno-dazzled world, and there's considerable resistance to the very idea of challenging technology.
Is that Google Maps?
They are trying to turn everybody into what looks a lot like an addict.
Not only addictive, but obsessive compulsive addictive.
So that was another slice of the soundtrack from Stare Into the Lights, My Pretties, a recently released feature documentary all about the effects of technology, screens and digital culture on our lives. Before that, in a pre-recorded interview, I was talking with Jordan Brown, the film's writer and director. The film features interviews and archival footage from numerous renowned authors, academics, thinkers in the fields of technology, psychology, neuroscience, including Sherry Turkle, Douglas Rushkoff and Susan Greenfield, to name a few. The film can be viewed online free of charge at... The URL is stareintothelightsmypretties.jore.cc. Hopefully you can find it there online. That's all from Communication Mixdown for this week. We're here next Thursday at the same time.